So hello everyone, my name is Leah Rosen. I'm a junior researcher at Wageningen University in the Health and Society Department. And I am moderating the session today along with Laura Bovman, who is my colleague, an assistant professor also in the Health and Society Department. So thank you for joining for this session on digital salutogenic interventions. And I think it's a topic that's just really relevant for today's world, and especially after this pandemic year when everything had to go digital. So it's a pleasure to have you here, and I want to give a warm welcome to our speakers today, Ceyla de Francisco Profumo and her colleague Alicia San Jose, who is here to answer questions, Shimon Waldvogel, I hope I pronounced that well, and Mark de San Pedro Lopez. And please, while the presentations go on, don't hesitate to write your questions in the chat, and Laura will keep an eye out for them. And yeah, for the speakers, if you want, I can let you know when you have like 1 minute left on your presentation time, but I think we're quite comfortable on time. So, and we'll have a break around 9:35 with a bit of music to unwind, and yeah. So yes, the first speaker is Ceyla de Francisco Profumo. She is a professor at the University School of Nursing of the Hospital de la Santa Creu y Sant Pau in Barcelona, and she will give a presentation about positive mental health promotion game for adolescents, and she has a pre-recording, so I will share my screen. Please let me know.
Yes, looks fine.
Okay. Hello, good morning. My name is Ceyla de Francisco. And first of all, I would like to apologize for my limitations with the English language and apologize in advance for any mistakes I may make. Secondly, I would like to thank the organization of the Scientific Committee for the opportunity to present our project at the conference. In this communication, we will present Shadows, Positive Mental Health Promotion Game for Adolescents, a project born from the Nursing School of São Paulo and the staff of the Department of Psychiatry and Drug Addiction of the Hospital de la Santa Creu y São Paulo. By way of introduction, we will introduce some important concepts. Mental health problems are a public health concern, and global and national social programs and policies include action to promote mental health and prevent mental disorders. Despite the fact that policies include the promotion and prevention of mental health, it is common in practice that mental health continues to be analyzed in terms of the presence or absence of mental disorders. The central idea of promoting mental health is that improvements in people's mental health reduce the risk that they will develop a mental disorder over time. KES established the complete mental health status model, in which not only the absence or presence of mental illness, but also emotional well-being, psychological well-being, and social well-being are considered necessary for the assessment of a person's well-being. The development of positive mental health as a protective factor for mental illness becomes one of the most important axes in the promotion of the complete mental health state. Antonovsky presents his salutogenic model as a direction for health promotion. This model focuses on problem solving and the solution finding. It identifies the concept of general resistance reserves that help people to move in the direction of positive health. General resistance reserves are defined as the personal, interpersonal, or contextual resource that individuals can draw upon for the effective management of stress or strain. And the sense of coherence represents the person's ability to perceive the meaning of the world around him or her. It is the personal disposition to value life events as understandable, manageable, and full of meaning. A sense that facilitates adaptive problem solving. One of the main objectives of psychiatric nursing is to favor the process of empowerment to support and offer the person tools that allow them to make well-founded and adaptive decisions to solve problems. As nurse, we need to adapt learning to the youth and adolescent population emerge through the design of participatory projects based on the dynamization of those capabilities that children and young people themselves can or want to enhance. Game-based learning and gamification are gaining prominence for the results in the motivation in the motivational field, promoting active learning and fun. In an attempt to design a tool that could be useful for the development of mental health promotion in the infant juvenile population, this work was born. The main aim of the project is to identify the individual health determinants that allow coping with stressful life events in an adaptive way and favoring the indicated signs of positive mental health. And the specific objectives we have defined are two: to design a gamified nursing intervention for the development of mental health promotion, to favor the conceptual learning of the salutogenic model, sense of coherence and mental health as in adolescents, to define a set and determinants for mental health and protective factor. Firstly, a bibliographic review of scientific articles was carried out by consulting the databases PubMed, ScienceDirect, Quiden, and Cochrane, without date restriction in Spanish and English. The keywords used were mental health, positive mental health promotion, salutogenic model, sense of coherence, nursing gamification. Keywords were combined with connectors in order to find valid articles for the purpose of the study. The abstract and, when necessary, the complete articles were reviewed. Subsequently, a gamified mental health promotion activity was designed and elaborated according to the structure described by Serrat and Tolin to elaborate educational activities based on games. They are defined: title of the activity, objectives, narratives and presentation, description of roles, difficulty, materials, population, ranking, and evaluation. As a result, a card game, Shadows, is created, in which those things indicated of positive mental health are identified. The adolescents must maintain these things until the end of the game. The winner is the person who managed to reach the end of the game with all their internal lights on, either because they have not been affected or because, thanks to the sense of coherence, they have been able to neutralize the shadows, life stressful events. Let's go to play Shadows. Our shadows, the ones that always accompany us, tired of being imprisoned to us and carrying our most infamous secrets, have rebelled. They want to plunge humanity into an era of darkness and gloom, in which to roam freely among the most sinister chaos. They will try to finish with us. They will enter our interior, finishing everything that makes us feel good, thus extinguishing at light in us. There is only one way to save ourselves: to keep our light on. You must do everything possible to stay lit and stop the advance of the shadow. Will you be able to withstand the attacks of the shadow? Will you be able to identify what keeps you light? Will you be able to keep all your bulbs light? The game is developed in such a way that, once the narrative is known during gameplay, different live events are presented that will influence the decrease and or even loss of these things of positive mental health. By identifying the different determinants of health and their application in each of the situations, we will be able to maintain the things of mental health with strength or protect in front of the vital events, as a protection and or antidote to the situation. The only material we need are the cards, corresponding to light, the general resistance resource, that is affective relationship, occupations, home, self-esteem, physical health, and mood. We have shadow cards, live events, death, emotional ruptures, isolations, poverty, physical illness, stress. We have antidote or shields. These are sense of coherence, social skills, emotional skills, stress management, physical exercise, healthy service support, resilience, and for tourist events or treatments, traffic accidents, lottery winnings, drug use. The game is aimed at children and adolescents. Ranking evaluation at the end of the game, the winner is identified and the strategies followed to stay alive and mentally healthy are discussed. As a group, we analyze the usefulness of the strategies used. And to conclude the paper, we would like to emphasize that this intervention aims to develop a sense of coherence as a way to understand the successful coping of adolescents to the demand and stressors of life and life stage. In order that identifying and knowing these strategies will protect us from the increase in mental problems, such as substance abuse and others that are saying no after a year of pandemic, and many of the results of resistance turn off. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you so much. That was really interesting. Yeah, very, very innovative. And I really like that you kind of gamified completely the, yeah, all the concepts of sociogenesis and the GRRs. And I think I was just thinking that's such a good entryway for adolescents to start talking. It's actually, yeah, just also just playing this game because they could have maybe some resistance to open up, and perhaps this game also gives them the opportunity to just really, yeah, open up and reflect on themselves. Laura, are there any questions in the chat?
Yes, I checked the chat, and actually, Shimon, maybe you want to share your remark yourself to Alicia. Yeah. And I want to say Alicia will answer the questions because Sela's not here with us. She couldn't be here today, but Alicia knows a lot about the project. So thank you, Alicia. Shimon.
Well, I was just commenting when I saw the cards. It was very similar to magic cards that my son used to play and lots of kids play in the US. So I think it's a sort of like a proof of concept, kind of the idea of cards. And I'm just wondering if there was a choice of the framework for the card, you know, whether it's based on anything, because it really looks very, very attractive.
Thanks, Shimon. It's really nice, your comment. Actually, that was the idea, because, you know, we're in a world where Harry Potter and all these films are really famous. And actually, that's what we were trying. We were just trying to, the adolescents, just to open up, just to, with something that it was familiar to them. And that was the idea. Thank you so much for the comments.
It's interesting, because that's a choice. The magic cards are creating a different kind of reality for the kids, and they really like it. So I really think this is a great idea to bring them back to their reality, but in a non-threatening way.
Thanks.
Sorry. Did you want to say something, Alicia?
I've just on a question. Is the game available online? But actually, no yet. We're just basically trying to finish this one physically, and might be available soon.
Yeah, that would be great. I think there will be more countries probably interested in something in something like this. I have a question also for you, Alicia, and that is, how are you identifying actually the live events and the resources? Are like in any way the adolescents involved in that?
Yeah. We develop all the protective factors and and we just identify.
I'm sorry, we cannot hear you.
We just identify what were the protective factors, and then we just identify what were the aggressors, actually. Like, for example, we just identify what were the protective factors not to have a mental illness. And then from there, we just identify what were the aggressors and just to have that illness.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone with a final question, maybe? Leah, no, maybe.
I'll just add something.
I'm having an unstable connection.
Yeah, this is Shimon. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yes. Shimon, do you have another comment?
Yeah. Would there be like a guide for families as well? I mean, I think that would be something to consider, is like to provide some guides for the family of the adolescent, because that could be also an additional piece for that.
Sorry, Shimon, I just got a little bit. Could you repeat for that? Sorry.
Will there be a guide for families, for parents or teachers or other adults about the game and how to incorporate that into the communications with the adolescents?
I mean, for the moment, we're just developing the game for these kind of groups, you know, adolescents or even kids, a bit younger. So far, we're on the moment of developing, we're just about to develop the cards to see if the antidotes, they work. We're just basically playing the game to see if it works or it doesn't. So once we finish that, we will look into just developing the game for other groups of the population. But so far, we just wanna finish this one properly, and then we'll just take other steps just to develop the game for other groups.
Sounds really great. I think we'll all be very curious and excited to try this game out in our own countries. So yeah, thank you so much for being here and presenting this really lovely, innovative initiative.
Thank you. And the only thing is we're just finishing the patents and everything. So hopefully very soon we will be able just to sort it out there.
Sounds great. Thank you so much, Alicia. Laura? Oh, I think Laura has a bit of an unstable connection. Laura,
I'm back, but I'm not sure. I'm somewhere in the French mountains. So the connection was very good today, but sometimes it fails.
Yeah,
you can hear me.
Yes.
I would like to introduce Leah, who is our second speaker actually herself.
Yes.
And Leah will present about a European project, a European life project, and it's called Suitable. And within our project, we aim to engage EU citizens, the big goal, in more sustainable eating. Use salutogenesis as a theory, and Leah will, we have, let's say, operationalized salutogenesis and elements of salutogenesis to develop specifically the digital app that we're using in the project. So Leah, I think you are sharing your presentation yourself, right?
Yes, I will share. Can you see it?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. So as Laura just said, I will present here our project called the Suitable Life Project, in which we use a salutogenic approach to enable a sustainable diet in canteen settings and beyond. We are four partners on this project. So Green Apes, the Sustainable Restaurant Association in the UK, and the Virilla Center for Food and Nutrition in Italy, and us, Wageningen University. So first I will give you a short introduction of the intervention rationale. So regarding why it is so important to do an intervention like this. So we really need a radical transformation towards sustainable agri-food systems and eating patterns. So today, agriculture accounts for 30% of greenhouse gas emissions, 70% of water, and 80% of desertification. And there's actually a prediction that there will be an 80% increase in greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. At the same time, the current food system not only hurts the environment, but also the people. Today's food system does not deliver healthy diets for most people. We see hunger, malnutrition, obesity, sometimes even coexisting in the same countries at the same time. To answer these challenges, To Eatable Life aims to engage EU citizens to adopt a sustainable and healthy diet with the long-term objective of contributing to a reduction in greenhouse gas emissions and water savings in the EU. So what we see is, like, even though most people know that there is a connection between nutrition and health, a lot don't recognize or understand necessarily how their food can impact the environment. So we use three different lenses regarding the theory for this intervention. The first one is we use a salutogenic everyday life and gamified approach, which means that we have a very positive and practical approach. We frame things in an approachable, non-risk oriented manner and focus on what can be done in practical ways. We focus on the social and physical environment that people evolve in, so on a real life setting, namely the cafeteria, and then we look at into the challenges that they face in these settings. Number three, it's fun and intrinsically motivated. So we also apply this gamified approach where we transform learning into challenges. So really attempting to steer this intrinsic motivation through rewards and shifts in values. On the bottom left, we try to create an enabling environment, which is collaborative and participatory. So we really want to involve the stakeholders in the intervention developments. And then we include food service and the canteen environments. So we want to establish a shift towards more sustainable practices within the canteen. So with the chefs and the cooking staff, but also with the consumers. And then lastly, for the learning trajectory, we completely encompass the sense of coherence, so comprehensibility. We want to increase knowledge, awareness, and understanding of sustainable diets. For meaningfulness, we want to increase motivation to eat sustainably, and then manageability, increase the willingness or the ability to take action to eat more sustainably. So here are the components of our intervention. So the goal is to really create an enabling and environment and develop people's capacity to cope with the challenges of sustainable food practices. And to do so, the first component is we have a sustainable meal in the canteen. So this really requires canteens to reassess their menus and adapt them based on the suitable guidelines. The sustainable plate is easily recognizable. It has a label on it. And of course, the canteen is a great setting to target because you can reach so many people. The second component are the app challenges. And they are really aimed at activating capacities to cope with everyday challenges of sustainable food practices. There's different types of rewards. And then we have this gamification approach because they can win points when they complete challenges. And then with these points, they can get these rewards. And then the third component is, of course, promotion communication. So information displayed around the new menu items in the canteen, talking about sustainability, but also for the promotion of the app. And this also indirectly raises more awareness about sustainability. And where do we do this? In workplace and university canteens in the UK and Italy. So I will focus here on the second component, which are the app challenges aimed to activate everyday coping, and how we use this to design the salutogenic learning trajectory. So here you can see the three SOC elements, and that was really our starting points for the intervention. So how do we translate these into development of application challenges? So in the context of comprehensibility, this became the cognitive capacity, where we want to increase understanding through challenges that build knowledge and awareness and the ability to make informed choices. Manageability becomes actionability, where we increase the ability to take action through challenges that encourage and enable action in canteens. So picking the sustainable meal, but also in other contexts. So for example, cooking sustainably at home. And then meaningfulness becomes the motivational capacity where we try to increase motivation through challenges that encourage reflection, value shifts, commitment, and providing benefits, rewards. Of course, rewards is also a big part of motivation. And how does that translate concretely into sustainable eating? So for cognition, we really want the users to say in the end, I understand which foods are sustainable choices. For actionability, it's really about, I find sustainable eating easy to do. And for motivation is that sustainable eating is important to me. So in order to create the challenges, we took a co-creation approach, as I discussed in the beginning, that was one of our theoretical lenses. So we did some roundtables and some surveys to build up the new challenges. So in the top circles, you can see the capacities, which are really the pillars of the intervention. And then in the bottom, more of how we should do it. So when it came to cognition, so what is sustainable food? There was actually quite a high awareness of the need to eat sustainably. The challenge were literacy, ease of selection, and there was a lot of confusion. So what are sustainable foods? What does sustainable food consumption entail? For actionability, which is how can I eat sustainably? That was the lowest rated capacity. So there's really a low ability to select sustainable foods and integrate sustainable daily and eating in daily life. Also low social norms. So there was a very low perception of how important it was for other people to eat sustainably. The challenges were around how to make cheap, convenient, tasty, sustainable meals, where to find seasonal local foods, how to plan a sustainable eating week, very practical things. And for motivation, there was actually a relatively high level of motivation. But when we asked people what would motivate them further in the future to eat more sustainably, they said that understanding the importance of eating sustainably for the local community, for personal health and the planet on a deeper level. And also we saw how fostering connections was a very important part of eating sustainably for those who were already doing it. That's a very important part to also include. So regarding food, we go to the bottom circles. We saw there's enormous enjoyment around tasting, cooking new recipes and talking about food. And this really showed us that the challenges should be centered around food. And this is an amazing entryway to talk about sustainability through something that they already enjoy. When it came to preferred learning and interactions, we saw that people really like short tips, practical hacks, and not everyone wants to share content, especially on a public social app. And then there were some differences between the UK and Italy. In UK, financial considerations were much more important than in Italy, which shows us that in the UK, we need to put some challenges more aimed at showing how you can eat sustainably for a very acceptable low price. And then with students, we saw that they have a higher preference for sharing. How does this translate into the app challenges? If you look to the right side, we have some challenges that are more cognitive based, actionability based, or motivation based. But of course, in the end, they're quite interconnected, but it's just the entryway. So for the cognition, we have challenges where they can rank sustainable foods, where we explain them the logos, so to increase their literacy. And we also have fact checkers on myths. So for example, is sustainable food expensive? Does eating sustainably mean I have to sacrifice all the foods I love? Then we have actionability for challenges because that was the lowest rated capacity. So we have also the most challenges. And for that, we did a collection of sustainable recipes for every occasion, resources to build up your sustainable plate. We showed them infographs of seasonal food and also planning and preparation tips for their week. And for motivation, because we really saw the need to understand more deeply why, we have a range of sustainability inspiration resources. Environmental documentaries, but also cooking documentaries or things that can stir up your motivation. And then sustainability and finances is also here because we do want to shift that value system, especially in the UK regarding finances. shortly, this is the challenge structure. So each challenge has a learning component, which is positively framed around food, short and catchy, where they can watch a short video, read an infographic or a slideshow that targets mainly one capacity. And then there is a validation component where the user puts into action the new information acquired. And that can be a quiz or accomplishing an action. So making a recipe, sharing a thought, sharing a picture. And then for those, they get physical or social rewards. And we have some degree of flexibility because the users can actually choose which challenges they want to do. And we want to give that agency to the users to empower themselves to really choose what they need most. And so looking forward, we're actually going to implement this intervention. So it will be implemented September in the UK. So of course, we will do monitoring and evaluation of engagement to understand the underlying mechanism for capacity change, whether the activities increase the capacities and sustainable eating habits. And we will also look at socioeconomic impact assessments, notably spillover effects. So to see if increasing sustainable eating habits perhaps led to other sustainable behaviors in daily life. Thank you so much for your attention, and I'll be really happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Yes, Leah, there is a question whether we can show something from the app.
Oh, yes, we have some things. It's still on, but I don't know if I could maybe show something. But in the, I need to look for the presentation that we did last time. Is there another question?
Yes, so maybe in the... Yeah, if there's another question in the meantime. Not yet any questions.
Oh, sorry. What are your experience? Yeah, so the app developer is one of our partners, Green Apes. And I mean, I think it's great to have these discussions with them because they also see things from a very different perspective. And I mean, there are sometimes some challenges, especially in terms of, because we're in research, we need data. And of course, sometimes, yeah, there are some limitations, there's some technical limitations on the app, just that we can't follow the users fully, because ideally we really want to follow their whole journey. So like which challenges they do and like what actions do they do? So to get all that data and to really see, okay, is there a difference in their capacities? Of course, we have a baseline and an end line. So, but for to evaluate what happens behind this change, if there's a change, we have to see their whole journey. So that's been challenging. But I mean, they're a really, really nice partner to work with. And I see, I think also another challenge that I see is because we work, yeah, from a very theory-based angle. And sometimes they're more on the practical side. So I think that's where also we can learn from each other a lot. And yeah, this was a really good exercise, I think, for me and also for Laura to really operationalize, okay, what does it mean to translate all these salutogenic concepts in a very, very practical way?
May I follow up with a short question?
Yeah, sure.
Are you working in a kind of Scrum or Agile process with the developers? And do you involve your target group through empathy maps or in sort of this customer-centrized approach to app development?
So we did the roundtable discussions, mm-hmm. and then we had the survey. And then we did discuss what the consumers would like to see on an app, for instance. But I think it was still a bit abstract for them, maybe to really visualize. So what we are going to do actually in the summer is we're going to do a pre-testing of the app with some students in the UK. And we're really hoping there to get, yeah, some impressions on what we've worked on. I mean, of course, we've already, yeah, in, encourage this participatory approach through the roundtables. But yeah, I think when you see it concretely in the app, it's a very different experience. And we do, we did like do some testing with two students already, but that was a very initial small pretest.
And may I also ask something sort of maybe personal, the finances, how, because we also do sort of app and web development, and it costs so much money. And for us as researchers, it's very difficult sort of to keep the money flowing. And it will also cost a lot on the long run. So who finances it? Because usually we don't get financing for the IT programming. We have to get other funding sources for that.
This funding is from the EU. So it's an EU life project. Yeah. So that's where we get the funding. And Laura, maybe it's a 3-year, it was originally for 3 years.
It's a 3-year funded, co-funded, let's say, not funded, co-funded by the EU. We're now working also on what we call a replication kit, which is the afterlife that the app and the other activities should be, low cost for every new location that wants to use it. So that is, of course, a challenge, because locations ask us, but we actually need you as a research team. And we're like, no, we need to, make it self-supportive. The app itself is part of the Green Apes platform, which is an existing platform. And this is specifically about sustainable eating. They have way more about sustainable living. So it will remain part of that infrastructure.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and I wanted to share can you see the screen? Can you see the screen I'm sharing? Yeah, so that is, it's in Italian because this was for an Italian presentation, but that's kind of how it looks when you register. So there's a few questions. We ask them about their eating habits and also questions to assess their sense of coherence at the beginning. And then, one second. Yeah, so this is what the challenges look like. So here you have sustainable recipe. So you can see they can win 150 Banco nuts, which is the currency of the app. And then on the right side, you can see there's different challenges. So first, they need to read the recipe, then maybe they need to do the recipe. So there's steps in their tasks. And then, once you can see that's really the flow. So once they've done an activity, there's a tick. So that's how the app looks like. I hope it gives you a better visual.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Leah, and for all the questions. We have to move on. We don't even have time for the music. We are very enthusiastic, so time runs fast. So I think we'll move over to our third speaker. Will you introduce Shimon, Leah?
Yes.
Okay.
So welcome Shimon Walfogel, who is a medical doctor at Thomas Jefferson University in the US. And he will present salutogenesis in the digital space, developing and implementing salutogenic informed digital tools. Shimon, the floor is yours. You can directly share your presentation.
Okay, well, it's really a pleasure to be part of this amazing conference. What I would like to do is, as Leah said, is share with you some preliminary thoughts and concept about developing and implementing salutogenic informed digital tools, more of a platform as well as a way to implement it on a more wide scale. I actually, as you will see soon, am no longer with Jefferson Health, but I am working with Gary Scheiser, who is actually on this call as well. So people have specific questions, he's also going to be able to help with that. So my objective is to introduce and explore the potential for digital technology to promote the salutogenic model. The agenda is a very brief introduction to salutogenesis, partly from a personal perspective. The current state, also very kind of brief, of the EMR, electronic medical record. This is US-based in digital technology. And then to provide and hopefully discuss and get feedback on the idea of a salutogenic formulation and treatment plan and the role that digital technology can take in making that happen. So salutogenesis, the theory and model, and the central question is, how can this person that we're working with be helped to move towards greater health in an unpredictable, stressful world? And here I'd like to just share a very personal, but I think informative introduction. 45 years ago, I was fortunate to meet Aaron Antonovsky, and it actually changed my life. By a series of fortunate and lucky events, I wound up being interviewed by Professor Antonovsky to be accepted to be part of the fourth class of the newly established medical school in Be'er Sheva. Aaron, as he liked to be called, had a tremendous role in shaping our curriculum. Now, the curriculum of the medical school was very unique, and it was based on trying to help future physicians and other health providers understand the individual and their environment, consider healing as a multifactorial process, and also the importance of mobilizing social, spiritual resources to achieve well-being. For us as medical students, the entire region, this was in the Negev area in Israel, became our classroom. We used to go to people's home, to their workplaces, religious institutions, and that all became part of our learning experience. We would meet regularly with Aaron and his wife, Helen Antonovsky, who was a great contributor to our education as well. And we always gained great insight to the importance of seeing the individual within context, the environment they were functioning within, and to always ask questions, how the environment is shaping the person and how to incorporate that understanding into treating them way beyond just focusing on their disease, but their whole person. Today, 40 years nearly after, 40 years out as a psychiatrist, I retired, and I plan to actually incorporate more of the salutogenic understanding because I realize the power that it has. Beyond the medical realm, I have come to see and explore the ways that salutogenic model can provide more coherent way to see and respond to our current circumstances, most specifically in the US, some of the political issues and other, you know, issues related to poverty and things like that. To incorporate the changes brought by the digital technology, to incorporate that into salutogenic ends. So I would like to just share with you kind of an overall thoughts and a framework that I'm working on and look forward to some of your contribution. So essentially, I think most people here know about the sense of coherence, general GRR, SRR, I think we heard a little bit before. Some of the other components that came about are the importance of upstream focus, essentially prevention, and then to explore the role of institutions, as well as to prioritize well-being of the individual as a whole person, as well as to understand the role of complexity. So this is briefly like translating the salutogenic model of health. This incorporates the work that looks at, I think familiar to many people, the effect of culture, social forces, and various other things on individual life course, life experiences, and then the impact on sense of coherence. Obviously, if someone feels alienated, marginalized, they feel that their life is meaningless, it's gonna affect the way they function in the world. Otherwise, providing them the resources not to feel this way, whether acute or chronic is going to hopefully move them towards health, whatever, as we found out in previous conversation, however one defines health. What I find also helpful is just the synergy model of health, which was put forth by Pears Wilson, Marcus Marcus, and various others, incorporating the model of how to look at the individual within the ecosystem, understanding the individual from his or her biological all the way to macro system. I added a lot about the political because my interest is very much how the individual functions within their political ecosystem. Now, how does that make sense in terms of what we're talking about? By promoting salutogenic model and sharing it more widely. In the US, there is a very substantial effort to incorporate health IT, information technology into the day-to-day work of the clinical process. This is the, and there's been investment of like $1 trillion to promote electronic medical records in the clinical setting. So these are the strategic goals that have been put forth. There's a 5-year plan to 2025. And one of the important ones that I'd like to focus on for our purpose is to advance person-centered and self-managed health, as well as to transform to community health. How does that take place? And I'd just like to focus on a specific way that right now it's emerged. This is a process that's been going on for about 15 years. The current state of meaningful use, as it's called, is incorporating salutogenic, I think, ingredients and requiring that to be part of electronic medical records. Epic is a medical record that's actually utilized. It's the premier medical record, and it reaches about 200 million patients. Now, the things that I think are very relevant for ours and our sake in terms of person-centered self-managed health is that the individual, the patient, has their own access to the record. There is ways that the individual can connect with their healthcare team by filling out questionnaires. An important part of the medical record, and it has to be done for every patient encounter, is the social determinants of health. And for those people who don't know social determinants of health, I think it's also now incorporated through the WHO, you know, strategic, they have all sorts of, you know, what they want to accomplish with electronic medical records and health. And then this is a presentation of how it looks for every patient. So how can we incorporate that in terms of salutogenesis? I have come to understand, and that's part of my training, is you cannot move on in terms of providing a clinical framework. And again, I'm just focusing right now in the clinical setting, in the medical setting, because this is what this medical record is about. But as you saw, there is a way to incorporate individual and personal care that would incorporate perhaps many of the apps that you talked about. And today in the US, commercially available, there's something like 15,000 health-related specific apps that people can download. The good thing about Epic as a system, it has a very easy to use app system that you can incorporate that into the actual medical record. So patients can actually, before they come see their physician or a clinician, nurse practitioner, can actually fill that information out. And then it's available for the patient with their clinician, social work, or with another team that's working with them. So the way I perceive it and what I'm working towards is that general information about the person is like the biopsychosocial issue or biological and psychological. There is, I think you see my cursor here, the social determinants of health. This is the model used at Johns Hopkins, which looks at people's eating, people's ability to have housing, work, transportation, and each one of those areas has an inventory that's associated with that. What I'm working on is providing people a way to look at their ecosystem, which is what are the social institutions that are around them, so the individual can place themselves in the middle and within the area that they live in, they can find the institutions and other groups and other people that share some of their interests and things of that kind. I've been very inspired by the platform of this conference where you can have breakout rooms. So you can imagine, you know, like people that have a specific challenge can actually form a group and meet regularly online or offline. Then there's a whole set of self-assessment tools. I have developed and working on the work ecosystem tool with a colleague of mine. There's the flourishing inventory that's coming out of Harvard. There's the brief inventory of thriving that's coming out of, I believe Stanford has the whole center of thriving. And what I'm trying to create actually is the salutogenic inventory that looks at the person from a biopsychosocial, spiritual, and a political understanding, and then creates a formulation that helps guide them individually, as well as the clinical team. If you clinical, make it clinical. It doesn't have to be clinical. I'm sharing the clinical idea. Additionally, we develop like resources, including Citizen Toolbox, which is how the citizen can interact within their system to empower them. So what would that look like? This back to, you know, the ecosystem, the strategic approach, each one of these components then gets translated into a whole set of personal resources. For example, the individual can use some of the apps that were presented here in terms of food, in terms of, you know, sense of coherence, physical activity. If they use, you know, their Fitbit or they use the Apple Health, I think within the next 5 years, there's going to be an explosion of new apps that sort of like, you know, what they call, you know, personalized health. Then there is like a prescription for community treatment, for example, allowing an individual to share or be part of a community in the example of AA 12-step programs, or communities that want to make a change in their environment to understand, get engaged politically. Civic engagement is more detailed. And for each one of these, I've developed like a whole resource toolkit that people can access right now on my website. Now, the salutogenic toolbox includes case presentation so the individual can kind of better understand, like I said, through ecosystem, checklists, tracers, citizen briefs, and also motivate them to take action. Again, one of the challenges of people in the 21st century is and is going to be more so the sense of alienation, marginalization, feeling helpless and hopeless. Certainly in the American context where things are becoming more digital, AI, machine learning is displacing a lot of workers and having to rethink their identity. This, I think, will be going a long way towards that. So what are our next steps? This is part of a larger project, which looks to, in the next 5 years, work on focusing again on a salutogenic approach to help people make more sense of themselves and others. For the first year, it's going to explore prenatal and birth salutogenic factors, then the first 6 years, and each year we will focus on one category, look at the health indicator, what are the outcomes we want to achieve, how to enhance that, and things like that. And there's a whole project of how to make that public and engage the public. I want to thank some of the people that's been also working with me on that. Lonnie Golden, who is a work PhD, Gary, as I mentioned, Craig Becker, who is presenting at another conference, have been involved. Through this conference, I've actually met Mark, who's going to be presenting the next session. And I look forward to actually connecting with people through this organization and others to think about how to populate the platform and how to think more deeply about how to make it salutogenic. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Shimon. What a wonderful translation of your original meeting with Aaron Antonovsky and him focusing on, you know, placing the whole person within the whole context. That is really amazing. After all those years that it came, it's coming through this. We have actually 4 minutes for questions to Shimon. So who would like to ask a question? There's not yet one in the chat. I guess people have been listening. Anyone wants to pose a question, please?
Can I ask it directly? I'm too lazy to type in everything. First one.
Absolutely.
First question is, you already built this website with all these resources. Do I understand that correctly?
Yes.
Yes.
We have, you know, a preliminary website. It's part, I mean, the American healthcare system is very different than the European ones. It's really screwed up and it's like so fragmented. My hope, and I think the government's hope, they've invested like trillions of dollars in trying to use digital technology to make it somewhat better. What we're trying to do is incorporate that. Gary has been doing a lot of work exploring the Epic system and how to use actually apps that you can then fit into the Epic system. You know, you asked before a question about development. I think that in the American context, it might have, you know, kind of a commercial value perhaps, but I have not developed the actual app. I don't think you need sophisticated app. One of the beautiful things about the Epic program is it has very, very managed by the clinician or health system ways that they can have websites that are associated with the patient's record. So for example, if you come to me as a patient, you filled out the hallucinogenic assessment inventory, you want to work on your own flourishing or whatever, there's a website that will be specific that includes meditation. It may include like a physical workout. It may connect you with a health coach, a work coach and things like that. And all those things exist. Mm. There is a company right now, a startup that's gotten a lot of investment that is doing salutogenic, social determinants of health interventions and has directly contracted with health institutions. So if you perhaps come and you are essentially fit into this category, they will actually provide and connect you with services for homeless people, services for food, services for social agencies, and things like that. So that those websites already exist. Some of them are commercialized, but I see more and more going in this direction. Mm-hmm. By the way, my last contact with Aaron Antonovsky was in 1993. I looked through a copy of his letter. I was interested in spirituality and health, and I wrote to him about it. And actually, he was doing work with John Kabat-Zinn, who's one of the leaders of mindful meditation. And he suggested that, as Aaron always did, why don't you ask questions and do research? So mindful meditation is a huge part of, you know, treatment right now. And there's huge, for me, in my website, there's huge resources and connection, and that exists. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah. A follow-up, you asked before with the shadows cards, how is there a manual? How will you disseminate it? How will you get it running? What are your ideas how to connect to the systems that are relevant for you? How do you get it into the institutions? I guess something like Epic isn't really willing to change any of their structures or what they collect in terms of data and present it. What is the plan to sort of get your work disseminated and running?
Simon, sorry. You have to provide a very, very, very short answer because we do want the last speaker to have sufficient time.
Well, I can talk about it offline or if we have more time. I am also presenting using this kind of model on how I'm thinking about dealing with death of despair, which is a specific issue in the US. So it's about dissemination as well. But there's a lot of groups that are interested in improving healthcare, certainly in the US. I'm hoping that the European Union, which has amazing resources in that regard, in terms of motivation, reaching out to them. So yeah, I mean, I'd be happy to discuss with you some more of that. And in terms of the website, I will try to provide, I'm writing an article and I can share that when it's available.
Yes. Okay.
Thank you so much, Simon. That was a really interesting talk. And I want to welcome our last speaker today, Mark de San Pedro Lopez from the Fundación TIC Salud Social. Welcome, and yeah, you have the floor to share your presentation. And you will talk about e-salutogenesis towards an innovative and novel social technical approach to health. So very in line with also the talk we just had. Oh, you need to unmute yourself.
Thank you very much. Thank you to everyone for these very interesting presentations. So I want to share my screen. Let's see. Okay. So the title is, as you said, e-salutogenesis, stressed the E, towards an innovative.
We cannot see your presentation. Did you share your screen?
Oh, I think so. One second.
Yes.
Yes?
Yeah, we see your screen now.
Okay, one second. The full screen?
Can you put it on presentation mode?
Ah. I thought it was in a presentation mode.
Dona-li a F11.
F11, gracias, Paula.
De res.
Pues no funciona. F11. Oh, let me see.
Should I? I can also share your presentation.
Please do that.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is e-salutogenesis towards an innovative and novel socio-technical approach to health. So next one, please. There is only one slide. This is the slide. I don't know if you can see it complete. What is the relationship among e-salutogenesis, digital health, and communities of practice in ICT and health? Is it necessary to coin a new concept like e-salutogenesis, or is it a snobbery? The model that this communication illustrates proposes a reflection on the question posed. But first, let's see what we are talking about when we refer to e-salutogenesis. Developed by the Israeli-American sociologist Aaron Antonovsky, as you know, it refers to an academic orientation that focuses on the study of the origins of health as opposed to the origins of disease. Likewise, salutogenesis is in harmony with advances in the social sciences that seek a better understanding of the positive aspect of human experience. The concept of sense of coherence, very close to that of salutogenesis, is defined as a global orientation that directs the person towards a perception of life as understandable, manageable, and meaningful. Today, we should ask ourselves about the influence of information and communication technologies, ICT, in the field of salutogenesis. Given that ICT and health have already given birth to fruitful hybrid disciplines such as e-health and digital health, why not consider the emergence of e-salutogenesis? We propose a digital adaptation in the definition of the three dimensions of the SOC. the first one, E, comprehensibility, the feeling of confidence that stimuli from internal and external environments during the course of life are structured and more predictable and explainable through the mediation of ICT. The second, E, manageability, the belief that we have available the necessary resources increased by ICT to meet the demands posed by the stimuli we perceive. And the third one, E, meaningfulness, the perception of demands as challenges that are worth dedicating and committing to with the support of ICT. Let's talk about digital health. According to the World Health Organization, digital health, a discipline in which the digital revolution converged with the development of genomics, plays an important role in the strengthening health systems and public health, increasing equity in the access to health services and their universal coverage. The following concepts are related to the discipline. E-health literacy, as you can see in the graphic. Electronic health literacy has been described as the ability of citizens to locate, evaluate, and act on health information found on the web, as well as to apply to knowledge acquired in order to address or resolve a question or problem related to health. This definition should be revised due to the paradigm shift that new technologies such as artificial intelligence or extended reality entail. Digital transformation in healthcare. We refer to the integration of digital technology in all areas of an organization, for example, in a hospital care, resulting in fundamental changes in the way these organizations operate and offer new value to users. User-patient experience. It is the sum of all interactions shaped by the culture of an organization that influence the perception of a user or patient throughout the continuum of care. And let's talk about the third part is they are the communities of practice as backbone dynamics. According to Etienne Wenger, communities of practice are groups of people who share a concern or passion for something they do and learn to do it better, interacting regularly. The combination of the following three elements is what configures a community of practice, and through its development in parallel, the following dimensions evolve. The first one is domain at the top. A community of practice is not just a network of social contacts. It has an identity defined by a domain of shared interest. Membership implies a commitment to that domain and a competence that distinguishes its members. Community. Let's say organizations. By pursuing interest in their domain, communities of practices of practice members participate in activities, share knowledge, and help each other. For Wenger, organizations are a constellation of communities of practice, a set of interpersonal networks that produce meaning and knowledge, and practice technologies. Members of a community of practice develop a shared repertoire of resources such as experiences, stories, tools, and ways of addressing problems. For example, WhatsApp groups in the field of ICT and health. To implement a community of practice, the determining verb is to cultivate instead of creating. It is about helping to develop those communities of practice that already exist, albeit in embryonic form. Digital therapeutic interventions at the core of the model. And finally, technology in the healthcare space is rapidly improving, and smart devices are becoming more common every day. Digital therapeutics, a subset of digital health, are evidence-based therapeutic interventions driven by high-quality software programs to prevent, manage, or treat a medical disorder or disease. The treatments usually rely on cognitive, behavioral, and lifestyle changes. And based on this, gamified interventions are typically employed in medication adherence, medical education, fitness or wellness apps. A frequent strategy is to use rewards to stimulate users who complete mandate tasks. It is suggested doing gamification research to obtain new results about the comprehensible, manageable, and meaningful dimensions, SOC dimensions in the digital therapeutic interventions. Conclusions. First, it is suggested to innovate in current salutogenic theory by hybridizing knowledge with the digital paradigm. Second, it is proposed to update the value of the SOC components, e-comprehensibility, e-manageability, and e-meaningfulness, that is, the salutogenic competence adapted to the digital age. And third and last, this model is illustrated on the intersection among e-salutogenesis, digital health, and communities of practice in ICT and health. At the center of these approaches, one can find the key to effective health production. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mark.
Yeah,
I am very sorry. We don't have any more time for questions because we're heading for, well, maybe one very, very short question, one very, very short answer.
Just one short one.
We'll do that.
Does anyone have questions? If
no one has a question, I have a short question for you,
okay.
Mark.
Okay.
Because I recognize a lot from the gamification that we also use that perspective, of course.
Yes.
And what specifically do you think is the match between the gamification perspective and salutogenic orientation? How do you?
Yeah, think? The match, I think, is about the motivation. So it's a framework to introduce motivation and also comprehensibility and manageability to do things. So it's like a framework of work to introduce salutogenic in an easy way in the digital or non-digital way of promoting health.
Yes, Leah and I definitely agree on that it has to do something with the meaningfulness. However, there's also still quite some challenges because gamification theory is a bit different. And we probably will have a bit more discussion on that in the plenary session, the plenary discussion, which is right after the coffee break. And I'm one of the moderators and the speakers. So I will take this question also in mind and taking that further. Leah, would you want to say final thanks?
Yeah, I just want to say thank you to all the speakers today. and also to the audience and the nice questions and the interactions. As Laura said, the next session is at 10:45, so now we can enjoy a bit of music, maybe on our own, and some coffee or tea. And yeah, hope you have a great rest of the conference today.
Thank you.
Bye, thank you.
Bye.